ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय अहमात्मनमाशसे मद्भक्ताय सदुभिर्विना श्रियं चाद्यन्ति किं ब्राह्मन् येषं गतिरहं परा नाहं आत्मनमाशसे मत्पक्ताय सदुभिर्विना श्रियं चाद्यन्ति किं ब्राह्मन् येषां गतिरहं परा नाहं आत्मनमाशसे मत्पक्ताय सदुभिर्विना श्रियं चाद्यन्ति किं ब्राह्मन् येषां गतिरहं परा.
Yes, please.
Naam atma nam asase.
Mataji's, please.
Sadhu Birvina Siyang Chadyanti Kim Brahman Yesham Gadiyam.
Translation. This is actually Krishna speaking to the great Saint Dovarsha, about whom we heard yesterday in the evening. Krishna here opens his heart and talks a little bit about what is really in his mind. These verses are very, very important in order to gain a deep understanding what is bhakti really all about. And today, after having laid the foundation in the previous days, we will address the question, really, what is that thing called bhakti? What is it really? Here is the translation for you, and I will then read the purport. O best of the brahmanas, this is what Krishna says to Dovashi, without saintly person, for whom I am the only destination, I do not desire to enjoy my transcendental bliss and my supreme opulences. Krishna here says that he only can enjoy when there are his devotees around him. When he is without his devotees, he feels there is no pleasure in life. Krishna. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead actually is self-sufficient, but if he wishes to enjoy his transcendental bliss, he requires the cooperation of his devotees. He requires it. He needs his devotees. In Vrindavan, for example, although Lord Krishna is full in himself, he wants the cooperation of his devotees, like the cowherd boys and the gopis, to increase his transcendental bliss. Such pure devotees who can increase the pleasure potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I lost the line, so again. Such pure devotees who can increase the pleasure potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are certainly most dear to him. Not only does the Supreme Personality of Godhead enjoy the company of his devotees, but because he is unlimited, he wants to increase his devotees unlimitedly. Thus he comes down to the material world to induce, that is something like to bring, the non-devotees and rebellious living entities to return home back to Godhead. He requests them to surrender unto him because, unlimited as he is, he wants to increase his devotees unlimitedly. The Krishna conscious movement is an attempt to increase the number of pure devotees of the Supreme Lord more and more. It is certain that a devotee who helps in this endeavor to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead becomes indirectly a controller of the Supreme Lord. Although the Supreme Lord is full in six opulences, he does not feel transcendental bliss without his devotees. Isn't that amazing? Should I repeat this sentence? Because this is really mind-blowing. Although the Supreme Lord is full in six opulences, you know, he's the richest, he finds the most pleasure and so on. Although he's full, he does not feel transcendental bliss without his devotees. An example that may be cited in this regard is that if a very rich man does not have sons in a family, he does not feel happiness. Indeed, sometimes a rich man adopts a son to complete his happiness. The science of transcendental bliss is known to the pure devotee. Therefore, the pure devotee is always engaged in increasing the transcendental happiness of the Lord.
Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nitya Namine Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Sadarine Givesesa Shunyavadi Paskatyade Sadarine Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitana Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garadhara Shiva Asadi Go Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Rama
Hare Hare. So this is now a very important subject which we have. We want to hear today a little bit what is this bhakti. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, no, where to start? It's such a weighty subject. The song of the blackboard. Das Lied der Tafel. Bhakti is a function of the pleasure-giving potency, Hladini Shakti, which comes from Krishna, flows to the devotee, and then goes back from the devotee to Krishna. Jiva Goswami says that Krishna, the bhakti happens like this. Krishna gives the Hladini Shakti, that's one of his energy, into the heart, and there this Shakti, when it is placed in the heart, is known as Bhagavat Priti. You could give an example. When rain comes down and falls, let us say, in a cup of sugar. At that time, the same rainwater which has fallen from above to down on this earth takes on a special sugary quality. Yes? And this now is rainwater which is enhanced. Now here our example with rainwater stops and our contemplation what is bhakti continues. Krishna gives his energy down into the heart of the devotee. And the devotee feels what is called Bhagavat Priti at that time, love for the Supreme Lord. Now, when the Lord sees how the devotee feels this overwhelming, ecstatic love for him, he in turn becomes extremely pleased and in a way overwhelmed by the love of his devotee. What is important for us to hear is that bhakti is something which is divine. It is not really human in its origin. Nowadays, when you asked in the yoga community about bhakti, they say it's something like opening the heart, and the idea is here that the heart is the most powerful instrument in the human being, the most powerful generator of strength, really. Tum, 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 tum. It beats. It has there's an electricity of 2 watt going on, and it has 40,000 brain cells. And when it's opened, when this power is opened, then you can feel your life is enhanced. But this is not the understanding of bhakti which we gain from the original textbooks on spiritual knowledge. The definition which we have just heard is that it is a human potency. But the real understanding of bhakti is that the Lord has to give bhakti and gives bhakti, it's a shakti of his, the Hladini Shakti, into the heart of the devotee, and then that flows back. I would like to make this very clear, because look how nice you made the blackboard. Wow. Let us say this is Krishna. I just want to, I will not attempt to try to paint Krishna. He has a peacock feather. That's all I know. So bhakti is that type of energy which comes from the heart of Krishna. To the heart of the devotee, and is reflected back to the heart of Krishna. It's a circle, a full circle. Bhakti only takes place when this circle is intact. You cannot therefore have bhakti without Krishna, like many in the yoga community try, who sing bhajans because they know this is a major activity of bhakti, but who do not believe in Krishna. What they can have is a nice feeling brought about by the name out of Krishna's mercy, but it's not yet bhakti. Bhakti happens when that circle is taking place. Only at that time it happens. I mean, I really feel very bad to have painted Krishna like this. Maybe. I mean, it's almost an offensive drawing, because Kunibihari, may I ask you to just? I really feel bad. I'm trying to be a devotee of Krishna, and then I've painted such a. But I think you understand what I needed to show to you. It's because of that. This is very important. Now the question to which we want to look at this morning is, how is it that Krishna himself feels so much pleasure when the devotees love him? Why is he not self-sufficient in the sense that he doesn't need the devotees? Why does he say to without saintly person, for whom I am the only destination, I do not desire to enjoy my transcendental bliss. I don't like to be without devotees and without this exchange of love. Why does Krishna say like this? Why is he not just satisfied in himself, you know? You must know something about the quality of love, or of quality of bhakti. Jiva Goswami has explained this. He has said, in the Lord, there is what is called a Swarup Ananda, that is a pleasure which lies in himself. And his Swarup means his own form or his own personality. Now, the moment this pleasure goes out and returns, it turns into what is called Swarup Shaktiananda. It's a Shakti, an energy which comes. And Jiva Goswami gives us an example because it's a difficult concept. He says, say there is a man who is a musician and who has the music inside of him. The moment he takes something like a musical instrument and the music comes out very nicely, then the pleasure is more. And he gives the example, and he says, Krishna is that musician. When he takes his flute and the flute sound comes out, the whole world dances and Krishna dances. Krishna ranachai prema bhaktera nachaya apane nachaya tine nache ekatani. This is a verse, and I want to give you the translation in a moment because you first need to understand it. Is some of you a musician? Is there a musician here who knows to play music? You know, I know Nitai Gunamani knows very well, and Manjari knows. What is your instrument, Manjari? Harmony, Midanga, everything. Good, Manjari. The moment the musician comes to an instrument, it comes out of him. That moment is a very relishable moment. So Krishna gives what is inside of him, just like a musician who gives his music to a flute, or maybe a guitar or a harmonia, like Manjari. Huh? And then the sound is created. His own sound comes back to him, and then he enjoys very much. The verse here says, ecstatic love makes Krishna dance. You know, he plays his flute and there's the love of his it goes to the devotees and then it comes back to him. It says, ecstatic love makes Krishna dance. Ecstatic love makes the devotee dance. Ecstatic love dances itself. All three dance together in one place. That's bhakti. Krishna, the devotee, and love. All this is a... Let's speak in German language because some of you are... All this is the bhakti party. Then the enjoyment is supreme and sublime. So a man can enjoy... all by himself, his thoughts, his different abilities. But when he takes a flute and manifests what's inside him, the enjoyment will increase. The music comes out of his heart into his flute and then comes back to him when he hears it. So it's the same way Krishna brings out his... through his flute play, the love of his heart, it comes to the gopis and it goes back to Krishna. And that is why Krishna says, without my devotees, I don't want to enjoy. It is not the same. It's not that same ecstasy. So this is what we speak of when we talk of bhakti. Pray for bhakti. Kneel on the ground for bhakti. Be prepared to not sleep for bhakti. Get that bhakti which comes in an active relationship with Krishna. And only that feeling of ecstatic love, which you cannot find in this world without Krishna having given it to you, that will make your heart whole. That will heal you totally from all the problems which happen when we don't feel the loving ecstasy. I want to give you the example, just to make it clear, of Johann Sebastian Bach. That's a German composer who once was playing on the piano one of his musical pieces, there were two people left and right to him who were holding candles. We say in German, these were the Armleuchter. Those who speak German will laugh because that's where it comes from. It were people who were holding Leuchte light in their arms, you know, like this. So Johann Sebastian Bach was presenting his newly composed music to an audience of about 150 or so. And he came to a particularly moving place in his musical composition. It's a very beautiful story about some type of bhakti which was feeling. And as he was approaching it, he was just so much moved by hearing this. You know, these old composers were very deep people. They wouldn't just put the a button down on a synthesizer with a composing function. You know, you make one sound, it goes a ready melody. Really composing it. He felt so much moved that he fell on one of his Armleuchters, you know, the people who gave him light, and the candles came down, and he needed 5 minutes to come back. Then he again played the same piece, and again the same thing happened. He was just so overwhelmed, it broke down. After it had happened 3 times, the audience says, no need to play this particular section of your composition. You just jump over it and you continue where it is less emotional and moving. And Bach said, I can't do it. I can't jump over this. And he again started, was really moved, and he tried, composed himself. And he played it, and he made it. Afterwards, the people say, why couldn't you jump over the composition? Why did you have to undergo so much difficulty for yourself? And he said, listen carefully. This music is given to me by God. It's not my own music. He has placed it in my heart, and I am playing it for him. How can I, you know, when I have gotten a gift from my Lord, how can I return it to him incomplete? I must give it completely back to him. And this is a little bit the idea of bhakti. The Lord gives the devotees his swarup, his Kladini Shakti in the heart. Do you know who is Bhakti Devi? Who comes in the heart? It is. Both of you are very close to the truth. Congratulations. What Bhakti Devi is, she is an expansion of Srimati Radhika. She comes from her. Have you seen our Radharani? She has one hand is like this. Have you seen? From this hand comes Bhakti Devi as an expansion into the heart of the devotee, if you pray for it and want it very hard. So when Krishna gives you bhakti, he gives you an expansion of his most confidential devotee, Radharani. It's very precious. He will look very carefully whom he can give this gift and from whom he will still withhold it for some time. And this Bhakti Devi must go back to Krishna. This is the dance, the eternal dance of bhakti. Love makes Krishna dance. It makes the devotee dance. Or bhakti makes Krishna dance. Bhakti makes the devotee dance. Bhakti dances itself. The three dance together. This is what Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami is explaining us. So once I want to now give an illustration of what is bhakti by telling you from something from the Bhagavatam. Once, there was the great saint Ambarish Maharaj. He was a king, and although he was a king, that means he must have been totally stressed out with so many managerial duties. He was a great devotee, had built a big temple in his kingdom, and he made a beautiful deity worship. He himself did not give this worship to others, you know, only. No, he engaged himself also. He would, for instance, be seen sometimes to be on the floor and wipe the floor for his Lord. He would say, no, this is my service, I can't give it away, I want to do this, you know. So he was wiping the floor, and he kept many items of bhakti, like fasting on Ekadasi, but he did one Ekadasi fast. Listen to this, he fasted for an entire year. You know, people in those times had stronger bodies than us. That's the only explanation I have for this. So when it came time to break the fast, Durvasa Muni, the great yogi, came, and he, Ambarish was very joyful and said, very good, great yogi, I want to give you something to eat. Because, you know, when you have guests, you should always give them something to eat. If you have a guest and you don't take care of them nicely, it is said in the Vedic tradition, Yamaraj will punish you. Be careful with the guests. Just receive them and serve them nicely. It's good for you. So Durvasa said, I'm just now coming. I will just take my bath and then I will come. So as those of you who were in India know, just now coming can mean half a day or something. So Ambarish waited. He needed to break his fast at a certain day, at a certain time, to make his fast successful according to the rules of the Smritis. So he said, I wish that Ambarish, that the Durvasa comes back before the time where I have to break my fast. But Durvasa, knowing a little bit about the situation, took a slow bath. He took time. So the time where Ambarish was bound to break his fast was approaching it. He asked his Brahmin priest, what should I do? I need to break the fast, but at the same time, I don't want to eat before I have fed and satisfied my guest, Durvasa. What should I do? And the Brahmanas were thinking and say, break your fast without breaking it. Break your fast? How do I do that? Asked Ambarish Maharaj. He said, you drink a little water. Water is said to break the fast, but it is also said to not break the fast. Because technically speaking, there's fasting with water, and there is nirjal fasting, fasting without water. Both is all right. Both is fasting. So Ambarish said, good idea. The minute was coming, and he would all the result of fasting for a whole year would be in gone. So he just took just a small sip of water and waited for Durvasa. Durvasa, by his mystic potency, had just, you know, spied on Ambarish. You know, you can do that if you know how to train your mind. You can send it to someone else, and then you know what is happening with that person. So Durvasa knew this most simple of mind techniques, and he sent it there. Ah! You know, my God, he has eaten before me. I know these devotees of Krishna. They are just so careless. They don't care about hospitality. This is too much, and I'm a great yogi. So he went to Ambarish Maharaj. He said, I know what you have done. You have broken the rules of hospitality. This is too much. And he took a hair, he just threw it on the ground and said, and invoked the mantras, and a demon came, Manjari, starting to approach Ambarish. So at that time Ambarish stood like this. I'm a great sinner, I know. He took full responsibility. I am a great sinner. I have not honored Durvasa Muni. Let my death come. And he was just closing his eyes, praying to Krishna. As the demon approached him, ready to kill him. But before the demon's hand could touch Ambarish, all of a sudden, the illuminous huge chakra of Lord Vishnu came, and it annihilated the demon, and it then turned around. Bzzz, it was in the air, you know. Bzzz, and it confronted Durvasa Muni. Durvasa Muni knew, now the weapon of the Lord is on me, and he just took his mystic power and he just went to the upper planetary systems. But as he approached, he saw the chakra was coming behind him. He went to Brahma. Brahma, the chakra of the Lord is behind me. Can you stop it? No, said Brahma. I'm not. Shiva, you are the master of mystic yoga. Can you stop the chakra? No. And then the Durvasa Muni took his last bit of yoga potency, and it's a lot. And he went to the Lord and he said, my Lord, your chakra is behind me. It will kill me. Can you take it back? The Lord at that time said, listen, Durvasa, I cannot take it back. You have hurt my devotee. You wanted to kill him. It's not within my power. I love my devotee so much. My devotee is so connected with me. Without saintly persons, I do not desire to enjoy my transcendental bliss. In fact, I can't do it. Then he said, you know, I want to give you an example. As chaste women bring their gentle husbands under control by service, the pure devotees who are equal to everyone and completely attached to me in the core of the heart bring me under their full control. Do you know this? This is a tip for married women. If you are loyal and faithful to your husband will do everything for you. And he will not do it out of being forced. He will do it being impelled by his love. This is the example which the Lord here uses. My devotees are like these chaste and loyal women who have brought me under full control. My love is there. And then he makes a love declaration. In Deutsch sagt man eine Liebeserklärung to his devotees, which is so beautiful. Please listen to this so that you know how much Krishna cares for his devotees. I want to say this in Sanskrit, and I want to ask you to say it with me because it's so good. It's Krishna's Liebeserklärung, his declaration of love to all the devotees. Sadavohridayang mayam. Sadhunam hridayang tvaham. mat anyat te na jananti. Naham te pyo managapi. He says, the devotee is always within the core of my heart, and I am always in the heart of the devotee. My devotees do not know anything else but me, and I do not know anyone else but them. And Prabhupada, he says for us to to know better, he says, the Lord's feelings are like those of a father who feels pain when his child is in pain. Therefore, offenses at the lotus feet of a devotee are very serious. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has very strongly recommended that one not commit any offense at the lotus feet of a devotee. So, Durvasa Muni had done this. He had made an offense against Ambarish, and Krishna told him, it's not within my power. There is now so much pain in my heart. I can't control it. I can't take it back. It's I'm under the control of my devotees. I'm sorry. You do one thing. You can go to my devotee. You can ask him for forgiveness, and then the chakra will leave you. But that is the only remedy I know. So Durvasa did this. He went back to Ambarish and said, my life is in danger. This chakra is behind me. Can you please forgive me? Now listen to Ambarish. Ambarish didn't even think Durvasa had done something wrong. He said, but I am a great sinner. You have corrected me for my eternal benefit. No, it's all right, please forgive me. There's no question of forgiving you now. You are already forgiven. You're free from any problems. This is a glory of bhakti, my dear devotees. Krishna gives it to his devotees, and the devotees give it back to him, and they dance together in that very, very nice way. Once Krishna was asked by Vrinda Devi, who taught you to dance so nice? You dance so good. Who taught you? Now Krishna at various times had avoided the question. He had said the peacocks. I looked at the peacocks and I got inspiration from them. But this time Vrinda Devi asked, and he couldn't keep the secret any longer. He said, it's Radharani. And he said something, I've written it down. It's the beautiful image of Radha which is reflected in every tree. You know, when a person is in love, he sees his beloved everywhere and he dances. He is in the forest and he dances because he sees in every tree his beloved. It's what is really happening here is his beloved is in his heart. And therefore, the love which is there is making that the whole thing dance, you know, making the lover dance. So Krishna is like this. He feels the love of my heart is reflected from the heart of the devotees, and he dances. He dances so beautiful. It's a love dance. It's a dance out of love. Therefore, when you sing before the deities and dance, Krishna is so happy with you. You can't imagine it. In the kirtan, you should first connect with the deities. You should see "Oh, Radha Madan Mohan, you are so beautiful," then these feelings of appreciating Krishna and his love for you will make you dance, and then Krishna starts to dance on the altar like anything. If you want to give him pleasure, connect with the love of his heart first, and then dance for his pleasure, and then that will be your joyous dance to eternity. It will be very good. Vishwanath Chakravarti, for those who like to know, I'm almost finished, will say, has now spoken about how Krishna feels about bhakti. He says, "I am more carried by the love that dwells in the heart of my devotees than by the bliss I receive from my own innate potency." Krishna loves more the love of his devotees than his being God, and the bliss that I'm God. he doesn't care about this. He cares about the love that dwells in the heart of the devotees. Although both these energies are transcendental, the love from the devotee and his innate potency, his own talents and potency, the devotee's loving ecstasy, which arises by the grace of the great devotees, is the ultimate transformation of the transcendental energy and the essence of all things spiritual. This spiritual energy which comes from Krishna, when it goes into the heart of the devotee and transforms and becomes love for Krishna, then this is the ultimate secret of everything. So even though, Krishna says, I'm the embodiment of joy, the loving ecstasy given to me by my devotees gives me bliss and attracts me. This is Krishna. So this bhakti, and we will study this very carefully tomorrow, has a very special power. And you will learn about the power of bhakti. I believe that all of you have this bhakti in their hearts. I have seen especially new devotees who are just all of a sudden overwhelmed with a feeling which they never felt before, which is so strong that they orient themselves totally towards Krishna and so on. What they have is bhakti in its beginning states. It's an investment of bhakti which Krishna is giving them in the beginning of their spiritual life. A little later, Krishna, he wants to see what comes from the devotee, what has the devotee understood, and what is he willing to invest in his relationship with Krishna. But this was the first of a series of lectures. We first needed to ask the question, what is bhakti? It's the potency of God coming back from the devotee. Oh, Krishna, I'm very happy that I somehow... Could you understand what I was trying to say? Could you also understand how I was saying it's not just a human feeling which is already there, but it is something which is an investment of Krishna and goes back. Do you have any question regarding this? I have to put... Yes, here there's Murari is there, and Ratnabhushan Bhushan, and his glorious mother. So, yes, Murari.
Yeah, because you spoke about the situation with Ambarish and the way of asking for forgiveness. If you can speak a little bit about this, because Ambarish, he didn't understand that there was an offense towards him.
Yeah.
But Duvasa, he had to kind of like find the right way to ask for forgiveness. So, the power of asking others for forgiveness. You know, you don't know if you have really done offenses. You don't know what you have done, but sometimes others take what you do as an offense, and sometimes.
This is a big, big subject, Murali, and it is, if you want to do a good take on it, you need like really to look at it from different perspectives, like you said. If you allow me, I will just talk about one very, very important aspect of your question, which I think will benefit you. I have written some notes on this a few days ago. The thought. I would like to concentrate on one aspect. You covered really the whole area. I want to speak about the subject when someone feels you have wronged them, you have made an offense against them. How to clear this? You will have to ask for forgiveness. But before you can ask for forgiveness, you have to go through three steps. This will be new for you, but it will be very useful for you. You know, don't we sometimes have something, there's someone who is not happy with you any longer, and there must be something which you have done, even without your knowledge, maybe. This is how Murari said. And you feel this, the atmosphere is unclear now. It's not like before. There is something in the atmosphere. So at that time, you need to first of all try to understand from his perspective what in his perspective you did wrong. This is very important. And you will then usually discover, yeah, from his perspective this makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I mean, yes, if I would have been in his situation, then what you need to do is, you need to acknowledge it, and you have to say and also feel first, what I did was wrong. The next step is, I'm really feeling bad because I have hurt you. You know, because even if you, from your perspective, see it all different, that doesn't matter. What matters is that person is suffering because of something you did. So, and you need to tell the person, I'm feeling wrong, I'm feeling bad for this. And then the third is, how can I make good what I have done wrong? What can I do now? You know. Usually the person will feel satisfied when he sees the first two things in you. That first of all, you know you did something wrong and you feel bad because of this. Then the person feels insecurity in regards to this relationship. He knows he won't do it again. And that's enough for the person, usually. When there is something where you wrong a person, and please let me say again, it doesn't matter if you think from your perspective you were right. I'm speaking now about one dimension. There are also situations where you have to chastise someone and he doesn't like it, but you have to do it in his interest, in the interest of the situation. But I'm speaking, and most of us, in most of the cases, are not in this situation. We don't have to reform the whole world. We have come here to reform our own heart. Let Krishna reform the whole world. He's better than this, and he's doing it already through material nature. We are here to reform our heart. And for this, you need to see what I have hurt you. Okay, what I did was wrong. Then you can explain why you did it if you want, but you should acknowledge, I don't feel happy that you are suffering. It's not good. This is not good. Then the second is, you acknowledge that it was wrong, then you express that you feel bad. You don't feel good about it. And then the person usually thinks, he understands me. He understands my situation. He doesn't like that I suffer. All right. He will immediately forgive you, usually. If it's not happening, then you have to do something. What can I do to make good of this? This is one dimension of your question. But your question has many other dimensions, Murari. But for lack of time, please allow me to stop here. Good. So, it's not completely answered. Who was that? Ratna Bhushan Bhushan.
Maharaj, in regards to your analogy of the rain and the cup of sugar,
yeah.
I was thinking...
That's from the scriptures. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it's described... Anyways, you ask your question. Yes.
Exactly. So the scriptures speak about the Hiladusha coming to the heart.
Yes. Yes, very good question. I am very happy that you asked this question. Sorry. Yeah. So Ratna Bhushan Prabhu, who is a philosopher and a scientist and a learned pandit, has asked a very important question. Let us please listen to the question, because I was so enthusiastic I interrupted him twice. Here is the question again. You said it's given, the bhakti, but Mahaprabhu also says Nitya Siddha, the eternal perfection of Krishna Prema, eternally resides in the heart, and by the processes of bhakti, Shravan and Kirtan, it is coming out. So here it says it's inherent. It's in. Now, you can't believe, Ratna Bhushan Bhushan, how much I've discussed this year after year in Vrindavan with the philosophers. It's also a long discussion, and we can privately, because I know you have studied the scriptures very much, go into the detail. But what this verse means is there is a potentiality of bhakti in the heart of everyone. It's there as a potential, as a latent form. And when bhakti comes in the form of the processes of bhakti, that is Shravan and Kirtan, in the association of a good bhakta who has bhakti, then this potentiality is awakened. It's a little bit like, let us say, there is a potential of fire in the wood. It is there, but in order to be awakened, it needs another fire to come out. That's a very simple understanding, and that is true in all details also. That remains also true. Mandaleshwari and...
It increases. But to see Krishna everywhere in the nature, in the heart of the world, and
just please to see Krishna in picture in everything. Just love, you have to longing for Krishna. Where are you, Krishna? Where are you, Krishna? And then I thought, okay, so is it not that he's thinking he just supported this feeling, and this feeling can make us unable to do anything else. We just feel so sad. We cannot see Krishna. We cannot. Krishna is not here. So.
On one hand, Krishna is there in the pictures, but then we are taught, we have to ask the question, where are you, Krishna, and long for Krishna. Doesn't this sometimes, this longing, couldn't it stop us and stultify us and block us? See, the most, we are taught by Mahaprabhu that the best mood in which to approach Krishna is in the mood of sincere longing, but that longing for Krishna makes us associate with Krishna very much. Because Krishna is not a material object who is somewhere outside here. But he is within the core of your heart, the core of your personality. The moment you think of Krishna with a deep feeling, that moment you connect with Krishna. It's not like when you long for your daughter Manjari, who is playing in Sweden and you are in India, at that moment, you are really feeling separated from her, this longing makes you dull, so to say, or makes you unable to do anything else. No, when you are longing for Krishna, Krishna is mysteriously there. That's the best way of relishing Krishna's presence. Once Radharani was asked, "What do you like? How do you associate with Krishna?" And Radharani said, "If I should choose between meeting and being separated from Krishna, I choose separation. Because when I'm separated, I'm seeing Krishna everywhere. It's more intense. Whereas when I'm meeting him, I'm only with him. There's only one Krishna." And this is the secret of Braj Bhakti. Although Krishna left Vrindavan for Mathura when he turned, I think, 11 and a half, and the Brijbasi suffered terrible, on another level, the Aprakrat level, they always had association with Krishna in his bhava form. So, to learn love of Krishna, which is a deep subject, you have to enter here in the world, you have to enter through this feeling, where are you, Krishna? You may see a picture, but you can see, oh Krishna, please reveal yourself in your picture. Have you not seen, sometimes you see Madan Mohan in one way, sometimes you see him in a different way. When you see him in one way, you may not see him so much, but when you see him in another level, you all of a sudden he seems to smile at you when you see him. So this is how you should always yearn for the revelation of Krishna, to see him fully. I want to end here because time is also there, but before ending I have a very sweet announcement. And there is also maybe a technical announcement by Gaurahari. I don't see him at this moment. Everything is no. This is the announcement. We want very much to maintain this project. It is not so easy. When you're here as a guest, you can see the Radha Madan Mohan, you see the nice temple, the guest rooms, the lawns, the rivers who flow here. It's such a wonderful project. But if you know, it is resting on the shoulders of just a very few devotees who are identified and serving. You may see, oh, there are many, many devotees around here in the village, but these devotees are caring for their own life at the present moment, and that is necessary for them, that is good, but it's resting really on a very few devotees, maybe 5 or 6 or so on. So it is very difficult. The devotees are really doing their best and so on and so forth. And it is my humble request, because I have a deep connection to this project. I lived here for a long time, and I know that this is one of the most beautiful places in ISKCON. It's so beautiful, you know. It lies in a valley. It has rivers. Bäche, sagt man in Deutsch. You know, small rivers. And the way we request you to help these devotees and to help that the worship goes on is by joining the circle of friends with a monthly donation, you know, whatever you can give, even 10 marks a month, or what is, we have euros nowadays, you know, or more of, or less, you know, whatever you can give, and so on. And there is a flow which comes back from the altar. Mahaprasad and newsletters and so on and so forth. But I really want to say, don't just do it because of the nice prasadam package which you get. Try to do it to serve Radha Madan Mohan. The other is an after effect. So I really would request you to look what is possible, and then to approach Bhagavad Dharma, who's here and everywhere, and see, there is a brochure, I understand. Actually, when you go, oh, Krishna, wonderful brochure. If you maybe you could do like this, that devotees can come now to you and get the brochure, and you get an information about the whole program, what it is. Good. The other information is, see you at 11 o'clock, not in the nature this time. This was only one time. We will meet up in the seminar room. I wish you a wonderful day in your Krishna consciousness. May you taste the bhakti in your heart. And may it increase, because this is all about this. The seminar is called the Krishna Samadhi. I wish you a good Krishna Samadhi today. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Prema Nandi Hari Hari Bol.